Hi, and welcome to the Making Our Way podcast. This week, it's just us as we start a little early with Christy heading over to, where are you going, Christy?
WorkbenchCon.
To WorkbenchCon. Thanks for listening.
Hey, guys. What's up? How you guys doing? Hey. I feel good. I just saw you.
Yeah, I know. For real.
A few days ago.
All right, so none of us have done anything. Let's go to the next. No, just kidding. What have you been up to, Christy?
I just got back from the farm. We did a last minute trip up to the farm and did some family time. But the thing today, and I meant to send you guys this video in advance. So my dad and my uncle, they do some logging. They take harvest walnut, ash, hickory, whatever needs to be harvested throughout both of their farms because their farms are right next to each other. And right now in particular, they're in a big push to get the large trees off of and away from the fence rows, you know, the fence lines, because that's the trees that come down, you know, and then you got to redo your fence and all that kind of stuff. So, and the fact that now it seems to be good prices on walnut and pretty much everything. So there you go. A lot of folks are enjoying using walnut and all kinds of species of from my farm too. So anyway, but I actually witnessed this for the first time, you know, for years when we were kids, dad would cut and we would, you know, take, we'd help because we burned wood to heat the house. Mm-hmm. But, watching them now, particularly as they're doing it and they're in their upper 70s and my dad turns 80 at the end or later this year, it's a different perspective. And now as an adult, because I foresee, you know, the worst case scenarios with these kind of situations, but like, hey, they have this monster walnut coming down. So my dad's on the tractor. They've got the line. They got a hook cable hooked to the tractor. And then my uncle is the one actually cutting. So he's there at the base of the tree. And this tree is definitely diameter, probably at least 5 feet. I mean, it is a massive tree around. And he's just, you know, cutting away at it. And Marvin and I are standing by, you know, on the way down. And it's starting to look like it's going to twist and not go the way they want to go, because they wanted to pull it into dad's field as opposed to going over the fence, which is the whole purpose of doing this whole excursion. And so this thing starts to twist and turn, and my uncle Arnie is kind of getting his chainsaw working it, and my heart is just like pounding and pounding because it's coming down and he's just standing there. And so it twists and it does go over the fence. It gets stuck in another tree, so it doesn't go completely down. But like my uncle's like standing within like less than 2 feet of this thing as it comes down. And I don't know. I mean, it just,
honestly, it's probably the safest place to be because you don't have all the width of the branches.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But I mean,
but also, yeah. So when something like that goes wrong, who gets to yell at who? Like, is it the tractor's fault? Is it the chainsaw's fault? Is it?
I don't know. I mean, thankfully, it's always worked out. I mean, between the two of them, they have over a century of experience logging. I mean, like I said, they're both pushing 80 or almost 80 or more like 120 years, because they've been literally doing this on that piece of property or those two pieces of property their entire lives. But man, I mean, I told Marvin, I said, we're not telling mom any of these rough details. Obviously we say, oh yeah, dad cut the log, you know, da, 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 da. But I'm like, we're not telling them how stressed we were. We're not telling mom how stressed we were as we were witnessing this.
I would love to get a round piece like that for a kitchen table. Cause most times I guess they cut them in slabs. Like, I don't need a long table. It's just Kristen and I'd like a cookie, I guess you'd say, but something,
right?
5 feet. I mean, that would be amazing. That's out of my budget though.
Yeah. They, 8 feet is usually the length of the trunk that they're, you know, going to sell. And for some trees, they'll get two sections. They'll get 16 to 20 feet. That's clean and big enough and straight and everything. But Marvin and I were kind of, while we were across the creek there, before they started doing that, we were kind of like scavenging parts, you know, of crotches and just the different elbows or knees or whatever you want to call it, is the branches, because these branches are still massively big.
Right.
So we were able to do some some cutting and some trimming and brought a pickup load full.
They've had some great trees fall in my neighborhood lately with all these storms, but I just don't have the equipment. You know, I don't have a trailer. I don't have any way to lift it. I don't. And so anything big enough to want to keep, I don't have any way to pick up.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of work too. And it takes up a lot of room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, we had the little gator and so we loaded it up and then, but then, you know, it filled the bed of the pickup, bringing it home today. And we put it back on the stack of the other walnut logs that we've got in the backyard, but we need to, Marvin wants to start doing some rifle stocks, kind of experiment with that. Cause he does all kinds of reloading and he's put together a number of guns over the years. But he's not done any like customization, like rifle stocks or pistol grips or anything along that line. So that's kind of what he's, wanting to do. So,
all right, Dean, what have you been up to?
Yeah, man, I've got a few projects I've been working on. One was I got my hands on one of those foil, heat foil presses like you got
that
you do the pins with. Yeah. Guy was throwing it away because he said the cartridge was stuck. And so what it looked like is there were some set pins, like two set screws to hold the cartridge from sliding. And I guess they stripped them. And so they tried to drill them out and just decided to buy a new one that it wasn't going to work. And so I was like, well, I'll take it home. And
yeah,
I also noticed I say and so a lot on my reels this weekend. But anyway, I brought it home and I was just kind of like, how am I going to get this out? So finally, what I ended up doing was I put a bolt in the end of it and I have a slide hammer for like doing auto body work. And I used a slide hammer and just started hammering it and I got it to slide a little bit. And so then I put some, it's not WD-40, it's that PB Blaster stuff, but put a lubricant in there and then put it on its side. I put a big heavy headed bolt back into the piece and I just knocked the shit out of it and forced it all the way through. Because once I saw it moved, I was like, okay, well, I can move it. And if I just have to hit it harder than the brass is strong, I can at least get it out and then get a new piece. Well, it ended up not really marring that much, but the set screws were still in there and I couldn't back them out because they had fucked it all up. And so I took a file and I just filed them on the inside to get them back smooth. And now it works great. I don't think it's going to do leather like I was trying to do in the example video, just because it goes up to 400 and the brand I had was super thick. So it's almost like this giant heat sink. But
take a long time to heat it all the way up.
Right. So I just need to make some stamps and buy some of that foil paper.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, you had it wet, the old leather wet. Is that normal that you would wet it when you're doing that process?
I do that if I was going to burn the leather, I wet it. Not necessarily in the laser, but if I was going to brand it, I wet the wood too. I guess maybe I'm not thinking straight, but
I mean, I just was thinking
took the heat away.
Yeah. Like it's quenching it.
Might have. No, I mean, that's a good point. I didn't consider it. Well, the first time I tried it, like I turned it on, it comes on at 100. I put it at 150, which was the foiling temp, and that didn't do anything to the leather. And so then I cranked it all the way up, and before it reached 400, it was smoking so much because mice have been pissing on this thing for who knows how long.
Yeah, grease, all kinds of shit.
So, but I was excited to get it out, and it came on, and it did everything it was supposed to do. So that's a pretty nice tool to just, I felt kind of like you, like stumble across. All that was I was helping a guy move some stuff. And I'm like, okay, what are we moving and what's garbage? And as he's IDing stuff for garbage, I got 10 packs of ripstop fabric in different colors. I got a bunch of foam that I was like, well, if we're moving, I could use this foam. So I got a bunch of big foam pieces, the ones that didn't smell like rat piss. And I got that. And I got something else that he was like, that's trash. I'm like, well, it ain't trash to me. I can do something with
trash.
This. Yeah. So, but he was like, yeah, it's piece of shit, can't get the slide out, can't do nothing with it, and it didn't take me that long.
Yeah, well, most people are incompetent as shit, so
yeah. Just some persistent wax. But so I did
if
that.
There's anybody who knows persistent whacking,
yeah, it's me. And then the other project was one, you know, it was a I told y'all a little bit about this Saturday, so you're gonna have to rehear it, but my new truck the passenger seat just rattled ungodly amount. It was almost a point like I felt bad for the passenger because you could see him just vibrating the whole time because the seat's like bouncing around with the truck. And it's not like you're having the luxury of the springs because the seat's moving. So your whole body's shaking. Well, I decided on Saturday, I was like, let me just take it out. Maybe it's something with the rails. It's only four bolts to take the seat out. And so I undid the four bolts. And that was my first aha moment was when I got to the fourth bolt, it just spun and I reached out and pulled it up. It wasn't even threaded into a deal. It was just dropped into a hole. Like they found one bolt size smaller than the threads and they just dropped it in there. I'm like, all right, yeah, it's bolted in. And that fourth bolt was not in. So then I get it out and I thought it was the rails, but it wasn't the rails. It was the mechanism that lets you slide back and forth. It has a pin that's a pivot and the pin had slop in it. It looked like there was probably a plastic spacer at some time, probably degraded over time, and there was slop there. And then in addition to the shaft that came out and slides into the notches, it just from wear and shaking around all this time, it had indentions on both sides of it from just wear. And so those two factors added up to about the half an inch of seat slop that I was trying to get rid of. So I decided, I was like, all right, screw it. I'm just going to try to take it all apart. It's funny. There's little things like how they bolted it to the seats, the seat bolts stop the slides. So I can't even get to the furthest back position. And when I was buying the car, I asked him about it. He was like, oh, it's hitting the jump seats. That's why I won't go all the way back. And it's not that. It's the bolt for the seat is blocking. I've never seen slides like this. I haven't done a ton with seats, but I mean, I've changed the seats in the Porsche a lot. They're normally just rails that slide back and forth. This one has rollers on the inside. And so the roller is hitting the bolt and that's stopping it from moving back and forth. So I thought I was going to be clever and I had a moment, an aha moment when I made the new shaft, the new pin or piece that slides back and forth. I offset where it mounted on the shaft because I was like, well, if I offset it, I can get it that much further back and it'll fit in the, I'll get the full range of motion. And so I just cut a piece of steel, tapped a hole, drilled it out, made sure it was much less tolerance. Like it barely fit the pin and then put it all back together. I had to grind the top off because it was kind of like machine set. So I grinded the top off and knocked it out. And so then when I put it back in, I tack welded it back in place. That was an interesting process because there's a spring that pushes it back into lock, like in tension. So you had to pull the spring back, push the pin up into the shaft, let go of the spring. That rod stops the spring, but then also bring the handle back and push the pin back down into the handle. So that was kind of an interesting, that took a little while to get, okay, how am I going to do this? But got it all together, got the seat put back in, and I put the damn sliding piece the wrong way to account for my offset.
Oh.
I went the wrong way. I was like, I'm not going to go cut it all off and everything. I'm just going to put it back in. But I got it all bolted back in the truck, and it's awesome. Doesn't make any noise anymore. Really happy that was a fix that cost me no money. I didn't have to buy seat covers or new rails or anything. And the other thing I did was that fourth bolt. I found, what size the hole was and I tapped it and then put a bolt that fit. So now all four points are bolted down.
Nice.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun working on the truck. I mean, it's frustrating when you find just one more thing that's not how you think it should be.
I mean, it's 50 years old.
Right. So I posted a story when I was going through it. There was a newspaper that was like stuck in the seat cushion that had a shopping list written in Spanish on it. I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, I saw that. That was pretty cool.
Did you say it was from Colombia or?
Yeah, the truck's from Colombia.
Do you have the paperwork of like when they imported it and all that stuff or?
No, I've got the, I probably have the imp. No, I don't. I don't have any of that stuff. Huh. But it has a placard on it from when they had to get it registered in Texas that, and it probably has a date on it, but I'm pretty sure it's been here about 10 years.
Oh, okay. I thought it was way more than that.
No, just about 10 years.
Is it right-hand drive? They're left-hand drive.
Yeah. It's left-hand drive.
That's cool. Yeah, that newspaper you found in there was really cool relic to find in there.
Yeah, it was neat. I would have never buy a right-hand drive because you can't go to McDonald's like that. I'd have to go to McDonald's in reverse.
Yeah, you just back up for the drive-thru. See, in Pepe, it was fine because you could reach
all the way across.
Yeah.
We just have to have somebody in the passenger side and you can.
Well, so me and my passenger this morning, she wanted bagels and I was like, all right, let's go. So we drove to the bagel place and I have all the windows open and everything. And she's like, what about your radio? I'm like, I don't fucking care. Like, I don't care. Let them take it. I'll just buy another one. I don't want to lock it up and get a window smashed over something like this. And then the place we went to get bagels was a little sketch. But then the line was so long, we didn't even get them. So we got back in and she was like, well, just let's get coffee. Well, there's no cup holders. And so we go and get coffee. She's like, you're not going to get one. I'm like, I can't drive and shift and hold a cup of coffee. And, you know, so no, I'm not going to get a cup of coffee. And that's something with that truck is, you know, there are definitely some things you can't do.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to come up with a 3D printed solution to,
Well, Colin is making that center console for his bench seat. And that's what this is. It's kind of, it's a single seat and a seat and a half, they call it. So the only thing is the seatbelt receiver. I haven't really spent any effort in it yet, but eventually I will either recover the seats and put a console and make it just a single seat that the whole thing slides together. Or I'll do something like that. I'm just not there yet. I need the fucking battery to charge and then I'll worry about cup holders.
Right.
That's kind of my pecking order right now is not have to put it on a charger every day, my plug-in hybrid, and then get cup holders after that.
I mean, the one thing that sucks is you're going to lose those up-close parking spots for hybrid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely put it on the charger every night. I'm like, this is what a Tesla owner feels like. The only other things I've been doing is I cleaned the slot machine. Like, it was just kind of dirty, so I cleaned it up, and I went through all my loose change and got a jar full of nickels. And we had talked to Leah last week about polishing the edge of a glass so it doesn't cut you. And so I have one of those polishing glass stones that spins with 1,000 grit paper on it. And so I polished up a bottle that I cut to keep all the nickels in for the slot machine. I did that. And I haven't started on this arcade yet because I can't figure out how to mount the monitor. So maybe we can talk about that at the end. Some mounting solutions. I'll tell you what the problems are and we can come up with some good ideas maybe. What have you been up to, woodworking, Austin?
Woodworking. So I just today I sanded and did the Rubio monocoat on my walnut ply desktop tabletop, whatever. And
that's nice.
I was sanding, you know, I got the new Milwaukee like handheld, which by the way, like that tool is so off balance. Like the battery hanging off the back. Milwaukee hand sander, orbital sander.
Oh, the orbital sander.
Battery powered. Okay. Man, that thing, you know, for like sanding on metal or something like that, it's great. But for sanding on a flat piece of plywood, like it sucked. It wanted to dig and leave hack marks, wow. You know, like swirl marks and stuff.
I hate that.
And so finally, what I did was I just cranked it all the way up so it would kind of like stay buzzing up on like on plane sort of as I was moving. And then Jeff at Green Street Joinery he's like, hey man, you got that thing hooked to a vacuum? And I was like, no, why would I do that? I'm out some sanding outside. He's like, because it's going to scratch the hell out of it if you don't have it hooked to a vacuum.
Yeah,
it's going to leave swirl marks like crazy. And damn if he wasn't right. Like I blew it off and it looked terrible. So then I hooked it up to my vacuum. Luckily, it just fit the vacuum that I have. I have to, you know, figure out what extension or adapter. And then I sanded it again, just ran the same paper, and it looks great. And so I was like, well, I guess I don't know everything. So
I'm not 100% either, but I think there's speeds too, like different grits. You're supposed to run different speeds on the sander. Like,
yeah,
because that's why it's variable. If it was all wide open, and they wouldn't make it variable.
I definitely believe that that's probably true. I just know that when I was sanding, the slower I went, the more, I don't know what it's really called, but I would get like chatter where it would be like hopping instead of just smooth sanding flat in a plane. It would like, it would almost like skip. And so I got the best results when I left it on high and had like no pressure. I was just trying to correct the sander to make it run flat, you know.
One year, Kristen bought me this DeWalt sander that was like a drill trigger style. So imagine a drill with a 6-inch disc on the end.
Yeah.
And I think it's made for like stripping houses or like just doing some real serious work.
Right.
But it always skipped and scarred up anything I tried to use it on.
Yep.
I brought it to, that's one nice thing about being in a big city is there's repair shops. So I brought it to the DeWalt repair shop and they said that the shaft was bent on the disc, which probably from me bouncing it across things, but I never could get it right. And I think I used that sander twice. She bought it for me 10 years ago.
You know, we had some that were quote unquote sander polishers and they never worked with a damn sanding, but they actually did pretty good polishing. Like a wool bonnet on there would actually do pretty good. And a lot of times you'll see guys polishing boats. They use those because they can like, they can use like a small bonnet and get up in like the curves of a boat.
I'm going to have to try that. That's good advice.
Yeah. But yeah, besides that, I'm ready to get this damn thing done. So I got, this is kind of weird. Rubio Monocoat, obviously their whole chat tagline is mono coat, like one coat. But then I went to their website and they're like, yeah, except for when you're doing walnut. That's a two coater. And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, I'm doing like sort of walnut, like it's walnut veneer. And I noticed today when I finished, I was like, damn, it does look like I could use another coat. And so I'm going to do two on the top. I'm just going to roll one on the bottom. I don't give a shit. You're not going to see it ever. But
I was wondering, you posted a reel trimming the edge banding.
Uh-huh.
Did you use a file to do that?
Yeah, so same thing. I was talking to Jeff. He likes to give me all the answers after I've already started. And I bought one of those like,
Like what do you call it? Edge, yeah, trimmer.
Yeah, edge banding trimmer. And he was like, yo, if you're using hardwood, that thing can really jack up your table. Like, be careful. He's like, because if the grain of the edge banding dives down, it'll, he's like, that blade will follow it and go right into your table. Oh, he's like, really? Those things are made for plastic, not for edge banding. I was like, well, what the hell? This is funny. So he's like, I'm like, well, so what the hell should I use? And he's like, do you have any like really good sharp planes? And I was like, well, I got like my granddad's old. He's like, okay, no. He's like, what about a nice sharp chisel? And I was like, I got the chisels that I open paint cans with. And he's like, Jesus Christ, do you have a file? And I was like, yeah, I got a file. And I'm like, I'm a metal worker, dude. I don't have all this shit. And he's like, take a good file and just slowly work it, you know.
Yeah.
He was kind of saying like I don't remember what he said exactly, but like at a 45 and kind of like towards the middle of the table and away from you at a slight angle. And it worked like a champ. Like
who was it that was given that?
Green Street Joinery.
Oh, Jeff. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
And so that worked great. And then I just sanded it with 150 or whatever Rubio calls for. And it did a good job. But the vacuum was really that was the key in getting a good finish, because it looked terrible before I switched to the vacuum. Like, I mean, it looked really, really bad. And that did it. And also I noticed, because I was standing on sawhorses, and where the sawhorses were, it would get wonky. So like I had to like keep moving it because like I guess it was the pressure, you know, like I would be sanding in the middle and it would be bowing down, and then I'd hit the hard spot of the sawhorse and it would like deflect and leave a gash.
Yeah.
And so like I'd pop it over the sawhorse and then finish sanding. You know, just, I mean, it's only the one layer of 3/4, so it's really flexy. But
that's cool.
Just things that I'm not used to saying, you know, all these things are new for me because I don't do that kind of work. So, but now I'm a professional, so it's not a big deal.
We'd like to thank our folks over at Patreon for the support that they give us. You can join them over there at patreon.com/makingourway. And on our top tier, we'd like to thank Marion Ward from Creative Ward Gallery, Scott Oram from Dad It Yourself, Ozark Spirit, Chris Shelby, Nick Birchtold, Andrew Richard Makes, and Mark and Donna with Rockin' K Creations.
I want to get some advice from you two on this arcade project I've got going on.
Yes.
I want to turn a top tool chest box into an arcade. So I went to Lowe's and I looked at what they had, and there were three options. One was a Craftsman box that would have worked, but it was the narrowest internal dimensions. And we're talking about less than an inch tolerance for if something was off or if I don't get things right, you know, less than probably 3/4 of an inch tolerance on that Craftsman. The next one down was a Craftsman with just like a book top, you know, just a flat top that opened right up. It would have worked, except I was worried about clearance, you know, when the lid closes, would this monitor get smashed? Because these monitors don't have the flat plate to mount. They have the one where they slide on top of a stand. So what I'm using to mount is it's a plate that has kind of like a an L bracket. So the L goes into the bottom of the monitor and then it comes back. So there's another inch and a half of, you know, space behind these monitors. The third one was the Cobalt, which was the cheapest. It was very similar to the Craftsman that I really liked, but it had a bigger internal dimension, which was nice. The only thing is the gas struts are in a position that they would interfere with the monitor unless the monitor was out further than the gas struts. So if I had bought the Craftsman, the way the struts were attached on the lid, they were low enough that I could have mounted the monitor just above them. This one, I have to be outside, like beyond the gas struts, because they basically take up the whole side when the lid is open, if that makes any sense. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yep.
So with the lid open, if I tried to put this monitor in, it doesn't fit internally between the gas struts.
Right.
I have to be mounted beyond the gas struts. So that's what I'm going to do. I ended up going with the Cobalt, not because it was the better one. I really like the Craftsman, but they had a scratch and dent demo that I got for $100 less than the Craftsman.
Nice.
So it just came into finances. You know, I'm already doing tomfoolery. I'm trying to save some money on it. So I got this Cobalt and it, I don't know, it's just not the most robust thing. What I'm trying to figure out is how can I mount this monitor either to the lid or to something else that will articulate when the lid closes? Because I want it to just look like a toolbox and then you know, Autobots, burp, 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 and it turns into an arcade. I either need to figure out a way to mount it to this thin lid that's going to support this 25 inch monitor, or come up with something else. Maybe it's a spring loaded thing or a hinge thing where I lift the lid and then I lift the monitor. You know, that's an option as well. But I just wanted to see, you know, a different pair of eyes, different brain, if that makes any sense.
So, if it was me looking at that kind of like, cause that top's going to be kind of floppy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would try to mount the bottom on a hinge and then connect the top onto like a sliding hinge, like a sliding, almost like a camera arm, the way it would slide. And, so as you lift the top, it hinges on the bottom, but it picks up and slides up that huge, like the U slot, right? So like as it slides, like when it closes, it slides up to the top of the lid.
Yeah, so the weight is supported on the...
The weight's on the bottom, right.
Okay, that's not a bad idea. That's something I hadn't considered before.
It would be easier to mount as well because you can drill down.
That's not a bad idea. The other thing I was thinking about doing is just taking the gas struts off. Then that removes my clearance problem, and that I can mount it. That removes all my mounting issues. The only thing is, what am I going to do now to support the lid when it's open?
Yeah.
I thought about getting one of those toy box hinges that when you lift the lid, it slides and locks.
Right.
They're much thinner than the gas strut. And it would be a rigid connection, so it should support the weight, I would think.
Yeah, that's what my CNC, my CNC front door.
Oh yeah,
it clicks open by using. I use those upside down. The problem with using them upside down is that you have to pull them tight to get them to lock to stay open. But
you bought the toy box hinges, or would you buy?
Yeah, toy box hinges.
Yeah,
I mean that's not what they were called, but that style hinge. Yeah. But in the orientation you're talking about, they would naturally click open, but because I use them upside down.
It's not a gas strut. So I have this problem in the Porsche where I put a turbo tail on it and it's heavier than the original tail. So when you put the gas struts in, you either have not enough gas pressure to hold it open, or you put two and it twists the lid. So when you close the tail, it's got kind of a cockeye to it, because one side has all this pressure, the other side has nothing. There's only one mounting bracket. So the original tail had one strut to lift it. For the turbos, they'd put two, but this wasn't a turbo car, so it's cockeye. And how I fixed it was a mechanical hinge. So when you lift it, there's a sliding strut that locks into place. I thought about it, I could do something like that. And then I'm like, well, by the time I buy that, I could just bought the Craftsman and I wouldn't be having any of these issues.
Very true.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a solution that you could do that with that slider, like I was talking about at the beginning, because that would all be like shop made gear, you know?
Yeah. The problem with the monitors is like, how do you mount all this shit? You know, it's not like it's plastic, and you know, they really don't have a lot of excess plastic. It's just wrapping the LCD. So I have two. I could take one apart, and if it breaks, then lessons learned.
What's the layout like? So are you going to be like standing up at the arcade, and all of the guts and joysticks or whatever are all going to be like there in the top of the toy box?
So not in the top, just the monitor and the speakers would be in the top. So you'd lift the top, the monitor would be there. You pull the bottom drawer out.
Oh, okay.
And the controls are in the bottom drawer. That's another thing I've got to figure out. Mm-hmm. So I actually have to use the space for the bottom two drawers.
Right.
I have two options. I have three options. Option number one, remove the second drawer, remake the face of the bottom drawer to fill the whole gap. Okay, that's option one.
Yeah.
Option two, remove the front of the second drawer, put a hinge on it and magnets to where when you pull it, it flips down and pulls out. And the reason I'm having to do this because the joysticks are taller than the one.
Right.
And then option three is to hinge it on the top and it kind of flips up out the way as you pull the joysticks out and then it flips back down. The reason I would do so, the drawback on doing option two where I've got the two faces connected and when I pull that top one flips down out the way is now you've got this other thing that could be hitting your arms. It could be in the way. I don't know yet. And then doing it the third way, if they just flip up and then flip back down, they would definitely be out the way. And I could really do some nice stuff in that bottom drawer. I'm kind of thinking it's either going to be one or three, either remake the bottom to where it's the full size or make it where the top one is just kind of like a false front that flips up and then flips straight back down, gravity issued. Any thoughts on that?
I the third one. Or which one did you?
I think so too. I think it'd be cool if that whole bottom panel pivoted up. And then you you reach inside and pull and the whole bottom drawer comes out as the platform where all the buttons and stuff are there.
Yeah.
So you would get rid of the fronts on both drawers.
Yeah. Just make them hinge together. So they come up. And then when you pull those up, then your whole system can come out.
Well, then where do they go?
What do you mean?
They can't flip back down because.
It just stays up while you're playing, and then you close it and then close it again.
Okay.
And
it's
so it looks like a toolbox, but while it's in play, it doesn't exactly look like a toolbox.
No, that's not a bad idea either. All right. So yeah, we got some good ideas on this. We'll see. I'm pretty stressed out right now, so I don't know if I need to deal with this toolbox video game thing right away.
Yeah. But I think maybe get your car dialed in.
Yeah.
Get your figure out with your situation. House first. But sometimes it's nice to have a distraction to where you're not constantly thinking about the house or the vehicle or the work or whatever.
Here's your distraction today. Kristen's trying to distract herself. She wants to do the taxes. And I'm usually just pretty like calm, or I'll just go outside or whatever. And I finally said, that ain't happening. You ain't getting anything from me. You're not getting any paperwork from me. You're not going to know anything that you need to know from me to do these taxes until this house thing's done. Yeah. I don't care. I don't want to hear the word taxes until we know if we're buying this fucking house or not.
Right.
I used a lot more of those last few words.
There you go.
Like, don't bring your psychotic behaviors into my world. You know,
it's stressful. Yeah. I mean, it's a stressful time. You guys definitely have your plate. Full.
Yeah, that's why you shouldn't be doing arcade cabinet right now. You should be doing something that's like so simple. Like you should be doing leather tooling. Like make a couple belts. That's there what you go. Need to be doing.
Yes, make a couple
belts. Don't do complex wiring and trying to make a toolbox into something that's not supposed to be.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a toolbox into something that's not supposed to be.
We'd like to thank the folks in the middle tier over on Patreon. We've got Tony Langer from Langerworks, Susan DePlantis from Hearth and Garden Art, Stephanie Taddeo, Kyle with Footwork Woodworking, Daniel McDowell, and Eric from Overall Makerworks.
All right, guys. So I was watching a little bit of the Tucker Carlson interview with Putin. Did you guys see that?
I know of it. I didn't watch it.
Okay. I didn't watch it very much of it, but I just wanted to hear what Putin sounded like when he was talking to that guy. And he was talking about how Elon Musk, you know, keep in mind, I just grazed through this while I was looking at my phone, but he was talking about Elon Musk having a brain chip installed, and that's why he is smart, so smart. And I was thinking about brain chips, and I was like, man, I wonder if Dean or Christy would sign up for the first brain chips to, like, you know, if it was like, bam, you're going to have 200 IQ immediately. Who's in?
The first of anything, no thank you. I mean,
well, obviously, wouldn't be the first version, but would you be the 10th person in line?
No, I don't trust anyone that well.
It's so funny because when you first started, I was like, there's no way. The only thing I've got going for me is I'm a little bit smart and I wouldn't risk, you know, brain surgery for a microchip so I could Google faster. I just have my iPhone. Like, what do I need this brain chip for?
Okay.
The second you said 200 IQ, I was like, ooh, I don't know. Wait a minute. Because I always like that movie Limitless where he takes the pill.
Right.
But then I'm like, would I do drugs to get a higher IQ? I don't think I would.
No.
I don't know about the brain chip. I don't think I would even do like the glasses, like the smart glasses they give, because you can't really go get new eyes. And I just worry about like all that focusing and stuff. What is that going to do with your eyes? And
right.
Are you going to be blind in 10 years because your eyes can only focus an inch in front of your face?
You can have cross eyes like the jerk.
Yeah, exactly like that. That's exactly how that shit happens. So Putin thinks Elon has a chip. This is so funny. I was watching YouTube clips earlier and I was watching Iron Man make the Mark II suit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, I know Tony Stark's smart and all, but like, how did he not blow himself up? Like, of all these tests, how did nothing ever go wrong and like he lose a limb?
Right.
The odds of that are, you know, little tiny odds, minuscule mm-hmm. odds, that of all these tests of putting explosives and rockets and, you know, arc reactor, like, how did you not blow yourself up at least once?
Right.
And it's the same thing with, if Putin thinks you're smart because you have a microchip in your head, but how did you even get to that point to say, hey, we're going to develop this microchip? And then how did they test it? Is there like some dog running around with a 150 IQ?
Right.
Is there some prisoner that's escaping from all the jails because they used them for human trials?
But do they? Okay, now this is going to sound really silly, but don't they use, like, they implant chips for certain medical reasons though, right?
In your brain? Yeah, like isn't the cochlear, and it's an implant. I don't know if it's
ear though.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was like back here. Yeah.
But I was thinking there was something else like that controlled like people with seizures and stuff like that. There was that they do implant something in to control like brain waves and stuff to help with seizures. I might be completely wrong, but I'm kind of certain that that's a thing.
I'm sure they have. I mean, I'm sure they've done some stuff to help with, you know, paralysis or part of your brain's not working or neural implants.
So I guess the question is, as opposed to just increasing your IQ, because at least that's for me. I'm like, okay, making me smarter. But what does it really do for me? But what if there was other reasons? What if there was a medical reason? Would you get a implant in your brain that monitored your body to make sure all of your health?
Yeah, like your insulin doesn't go too low or something like that. Like if you're diabetic.
An Apple Watch anymore.
Well, but also the monitor to make sure there's like no cancerous cells in your body and no, you know, that kind of stuff. Would you do an implant for that?
Dude, if I got Jarvis uploaded into my brain, I'm doing it. Like, for sure. It's I'd be so much more efficient at everything. I'd be better at making money. I'd be better at...
What if you like, you would honestly just go crazy, because if you're that smart, you realize the futility of man and how everything is just destined to be doomed and there's nothing you can do about it as one person. And you would go crazy thinking about all the solutions you have that you can't implement because you're only one person.
Well, that's when you just start brain chipping your minion army and then they can, they can do it. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I see, I'm on board with like, I'd take the drugs too. Like if it was drugs, you know, I feel like drugs is a loaded term because people are like,
right.
Oh,
it's got a,
you know,
it's got
like,
a negative connotation.
Right. Well, just, alcohol is a drug. And Chris has this argument in his things about Evaporust. They're like, I can't believe you put your hands in chemicals. Well, you should use vinegar and baking soda. And he's like, yo, bitch, those are chemicals.
Are also chemicals.
Like,
right.
Like well, everything is a chemical. Everything is a chemical compound. It's just, you know, varying levels of, you know, potential risk.
Yeah. Well, like this past month, I've been on steroids, antibiotics, technically I've been on loads and loads and loads of drugs.
Right. You're like Hunter S. Thompson this month.
But it just depends on your perspective of whether that's good or bad.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Are you guys, like, if you feel sick, you pop Tylenol or Advil or whatever? Like, you got a headache?
For headaches, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually did Tylenol today. I fell asleep on the couch at Mom and Dad's yesterday, and so I've had, like, my neck's bothering me. But I didn't take it until today because I wanted to give it a chance to, like, you know, work itself out, but I gave in. And
you know what works every time I get a kink in my neck? Build a shed. Go outside and build a shed. By the end of the day, my neck doesn't have a kink anymore. I don't know if it's just because I'm just busy
stretching,
working. And it stretches the whole thing out.
You know what else works really well? Driving a 42-year-old SUV with terrible suspension.
Absolutely no way that works. I'm 100% going to make it worse.
I don't like you guys' selection. I'm good with a couple Tylenol. I'm good.
Drug pusher. Thanks for joining us today. If you like this episode, please give us a review and subscribe. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on Instagram at Making Our Way Podcast or on Patreon. You can find all of our latest individual content on Instagram or YouTube. I'm at High Caliber Craftsman, Dean is at Dean_Duplantis, and Christy is at Twisted Twine Woodworking. Lick it, stick it, see you later, bye.
On our first tier, we've got Jacob with Griffin Makes, Jacob with Other Dog Design, Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concepts, Justin from Bear Maked, Jeff Stein, a weird guy, Dave Bauer, Caitlin Landerno, Morley Kurt, Greg from Platte Valley Woodworks, Brendan McDonough from McDonough Designs, The Grant Alexander, Jen Griffin, the Black Sheep, Brian from Moonshine Leatherworks, The Makeshift Podcast, Maritime Knife Supply, Henry at HT1 Metalworks, Brad Harrison from Brad's Customs, Steve Delaney from One Old School Pirate, Kelsey Watson, Dan Gallagher with Goofballs by Dan, Chris Powell from Full Steam Design, Spaghetti and Waffles, Rebecca Johansson, Ira Housework, Ed Johns from ButtJoints.com, David Beckwith, Rob DeMarco, Dave at Atomic Airship Works, Earl III, XYZ, Dana and Emmett at Rescue Room on Summit, Max at Camp Arrowhead, and Luke at LJB Makes.